the gurus out there, all the productivity mindset coaches, the masses of people that are telling you to, you know, being very prescriptive and telling you to follow these routines of, you know, getting up at 4 a.m. and you have to eat this and not that and do it this way and not that way. And, you know, twisting ourselves into these impossible shapes. And maybe it works, maybe it lands, but the way that we're going to really, truly tame our thought gremlins and make peace with ourselves is probably not by following some prescriptive set of rules. Nobody else has the answer any more than I do or you do.
Welcome to List Envy, the thinking person's off menu. I'm Mark Stedman, and every week I bring on a guest, and together we collaborate to build a top five list on a topic they choose. We do it draft style, putting our best picks first and then working our way down until we have enough to create a definitive top five list. It's a bit like fantasy football meets high fidelity. My guest this week is multi-hyphenate overachiever and fellow overthinker turned coach, Kim Whitten, and today we are building our top five list of ways to tame the gremlins in your brain.
So I've spent over 4 decades overthinking absolutely everything, and a lot of that was internally focused. But as I gained more skills, self-awareness, maybe a little bit less selfishness, I started turning that outward. And there's always been a curiosity of what motivates people, how they think. And even though I've changed careers many, many times, usually about every 3 years, I get into something new. There actually has been a common theme throughout all of that. And it's always been about understanding what people think and why they think what they do, why they do what they do, and what motivates them. So whether that's in interviewing people for, you know, why they use products and services in user experience design, or studying linguistics and understanding, you know, what shapes their language and thought, or, you know, marketing and graphic design, you know, how to make visual images and messages that are compelling to people. All of that. It's just a different flavor, different angle on this same basic idea.
I love that. I think I've had a continuing study in what I sometimes dismissively think of as how to get people to do what you want. Because when we talk about like marketing or influence or things like that, like it is ultimately trying to figure out how do we make the people do the things that we want them to do. And I know I'm being, you know, like, yes, that is not the attitude that we want to have, but it is ultimately the kind of, often that's the outcome that we're striving for, is like, I want you to press this button, buy this thing, you know, make this, download this object, whatever it is. Like, how do we make people do those things? And I find the general curiosity around that, and just all the stuff that swirls in and around that, I find really interesting.
And at every level, there's the individual level. Why does one person make a choice? But then these bigger systems, you know, why are political systems the way they are, or cultural dynamics, or, you know, behavioral economics, all of that is super fascinating to me.
Yes, indeed. So a thought was occurring this morning as I was thinking what I'm going to do later today. And I was thinking, oh, I might go and visit someone. And I just thought about having a sit down chat with someone and sort of saying, so, you know, we are talking about brain gremlins as one way of talking about it today, or it could be sort of the interference in your brain, things that are stopping you possibly from, well, we might come up with our own definitions, but for me, it's those sort of annoyances, things that are stopping us from maybe thinking the way we want, or acting the way we want, or are just getting in our way and just making us not feel good. And we are going to dispense our own, you know, ideas and practical sort of advice. But I kind of wanted to make this point because I think we need to be aware of this. Because there are people who have a habit of, you tell people, you know, mental health, I'm having a, you know, my mental emotional weather is not so great today. And there is a certain type of person who wants to say, you should do these things, you should get out more, you should do these things. And it's like, okay, first thing you need to do is acknowledge the person you're talking to is in pain or is not having a great day for whatever reason, they don't need you to jump straight into practical. Like, they want to be held for a minute and they want to hear, that sucks, I'm really sorry, is there anything I can do? Rather than you immediately jump into the practical, right, well, you need to wash your face, get out, stand up, do these things. It's like, yeah,
I agree. And I don't think we're here to come up with a prescriptive list of what works for everybody and what we think people should do. It's, yeah, not that kind. That's not the spirit, I think, in that both of us are showing up in. But what you just said, and I agree with what you said, made me think this idea of holding all of these ideas lightly. So wherever you are, you know, just take this in and hold it lightly. There might be some stuff that resonates. There might be some stuff that doesn't land. You know, the spirit in which we offer it is in what's worked for, at least for myself, you know, what's worked for me and what I think might be useful or interesting or helpful to share. And that's based on my own experiences of decades of overthinking and processing through anxiety, but also listening and working with others and finding some common themes around what's maybe worked for them or what people find useful. So my top is, in the spirit of this show, is to do a self top five of understanding your top five strengths, your top five weaknesses, and your top five values.
Wow.
And the reason why is, so strengths, knowing your strengths is crucial because these are the things that are going to give you energy. Knowing your weaknesses, that's crucial to know your top five because these are the things that you don't want to be working on. I know that's counterintuitive, but there's actually an upper limit to how good you're going to get with your weaknesses, how much you're going to improve them, and it's just going to drain your energy as you try to do that. So really what you want to be doing is leveraging your strengths around your weaknesses so that you can pull up in those areas in different ways without trying to improve your weaknesses. And then your values explain why you feel good, why you're pissed off, why you do the things you do, what motivates you. And when you understand that, you can stop fighting yourself.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love the practical nature of this. It feels like that's, you know, you could spend 5 minutes on each list or something, and I think that's really interesting. So the weaknesses list is really a way, is it really a way of you sort of saying it's okay that these aren't things that I'm good at right now? Because, you know, if you're having a moment, if you're overthinking, if you're dealing with stuff, maybe you don't want to confront the things that you are less good at. So what is that offering us?
Yeah, it's allowing us to kind of ease up, I think, a little. So for example, one of my top weaknesses is persistence, and another one is adherence to rules. So both of those kind of go together. So this is, you know, sticking with things, following the rules, staying within structures, you know, all of that. I have a huge issue with that. And I kind of notice my rebellion or the, you know, why are we doing, my questioning of these things. So for me, it's knowing that I don't think it's worth my energy or time to try to get better at following rules, but I can leverage the other things that I do know to make in situations where I do need to toe the line or stay within the rails or stay within the structure. And I probably want to for some good reason. You know, it's like doing my taxes. That's a tough one. And there's a lot of rules and it takes some persistence and, you know, keep chipping away at it until they're done. I also find it very tedious and boring, which is another one of my bugbears. So knowing all of that about myself, I can use some of the strengths, my attention to detail, my love of the big picture, my love of solving problems and improving things to work my way through the challenge and not try to, knuckle it through and hold on so tightly, you know, not try to be persistent.
I think the thing that resonates a lot with me there, I'm using words like resonate.
Sorry, I started it as trying to keep it light and fun.
I think what rings true for me here, Kim, is the values thing. I think is really good because it helps you understand why you might react in certain ways. for me anyway, it's like I value a certain expressions, certain ways of communicating. And when those things are, for lack of a better word, violated, when those are transgressed, then that I find that irritating, and I have a fairly strong sense of, you know, right and wrong or black and white, and can be quite all or nothing. And so when something transgresses one of those values, that can get my back up. But realizing that's why that happens is really helpful. So I remember years ago, you know, being in meetings and like values might not even be part of it, but also like needs. So I remember I used to work in an open plan office, and they used to have meetings, and that's not compatible with being a coder who has to solve complex problems or difficult problems, or is dealing with a difficult bug, or is dealing with something that is very particularly challenging at that moment, which might be trying to mess with a load of numbers and make sense of those numbers. And you've got a bunch of people having a conversation about branding behind you. And that used to really be very frustrating. And it's not until you actually stop and realize why that is and realize, well, I value, you know, my brain works best in this particular way. These are the things I need. Then you can understand why you've suddenly just blown up at someone, why you've suddenly shouted or complained that this meeting's going on and you feel whatever. It's like, oh yeah, it's because I needed that thing and I hadn't really stopped to think about what I needed. So that's kind of what that makes me think of.
Yeah, it explains stuff for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your top one?
My top one, thank you for asking, is to walk for a 10-song playlist. So get outside, find a playlist of 10 songs and go and walk for it, because that'll be probably about 35 to 40 minutes, which is a good stretch of time. It's a good bit of exercise. I'm borrowing a couple of ideas and mashing them together here. There's a guy called, I think he might be called Oisin, an Irish guy who talks a lot about fat loss and weight loss and trying to make it very simple. And so that's an idea that he was sort of saying, you know, here's a way, if like walking for half an hour feels difficult, think about it in this way, you know, get yourself a Spotify playlist, put 10 songs on, out you go. The other reason, and this only came about into my knowledge a couple of days ago, is apparently, according to the guy who wrote the book Ultra Processed People, if we don't use our allotted amount of calories for movement, for some sort of exercise, they will essentially be used up in anxiety. I'm massively simplifying and condensing it down, but this is what I'm given to understand. There have been scientific studies where people have looked at tribes people who actually go out and like hunt with spears, and then people who sit at desks. And what they've essentially found is that unless you're an elite athlete, we don't burn many more calories doing exercise than we do just being alive. So it's mostly just being alive and digesting and all those things. That's where most of our calories actually get burned. And so we sort of have this allotment of energy every day. And so if you use it in exercise, then that energy's got somewhere to go. If you don't, then it's going to go somewhere else. And I find that really interesting. So like, if you're not someone who values exercise, thinking about it in this way, thinking about, well, these calories have got to get used up in some way. And if I don't use them, then that's going to create more chatter in my brain.
I love that. And you can flip that question around, and you started to do that, is like, how do I want to use my calories today? How do I want to use my energy today? Yes. And it's related to like, how do I want to use my time today? You know, and yeah, I think that's really great. And especially the 10 song playlist, because that adds this extra, like, we all know we should go for a walk. And I just recently adopted a dog, rescued a dog, and that's completely transformed my life. And now I go for walks every day. It's one of the ways. But sometimes it's a struggle, and it's a struggle to stay out. But when you have that framing for a 10-song playlist, you are attaching something to it that's enjoyable, that's time-boxed. It makes the goal richer in some ways, and the outcome easier to maintain. I mean, it's all the stuff that goes into building better habit loops. You know, building better habits is like having that kind of fleshed out in a little bit more detail. It's like knowing when you're going to do something is also really useful. You know, almost, I think there was a study saying, like, if you know when you're going to do something, that's more important than maybe even having the compelling reason or having some of these other elements. Is like, just figure out when you're going to do the thing, and that's going to help you with motivation.
Oh, love it. What is number two for you?
Number two. So I'm calling this one, get some perspective through time traveling to your future and past selves. So it's about stepping back and getting some distance, getting some perspective. So too often we're caught up in our own heads. This distorts our thinking. It makes everything heavy and about us. So if we can start by asking, like, what would future me think? Future me, who's moved on, is stronger, is wiser, is working on loftier goals. What do they know that I don't know yet? You know, present me doesn't know yet. But also, time travel to the past me. What did she learn that might be useful now? So if you go there, you can find out. Go back, go forward.
That's really interesting. I think I struggle with some of that because...
I do too.
Yeah. Because going forwards, yeah, it's like, I don't know. I come back to this memory a lot, actually, and I think it's really useful because I'll explain. I think you'll understand why. I've had a career like a zebra crossing. I've gone from having a job to quitting and going freelance. Having a job, quitting, going freelance. This is the longest I've worked for myself, which is now 8 years. And in one of those periods where I was leaving to become a contractor, I got this little job and I made a dreadful mistake in this job. And it was my first sort of proper freelance gig with a grown-up arts organization. And I thoroughly shat the bed.
I've done that.
And I remember being awake at night going, that's it. Like, my freelance career is over before it even started, because they're going to tell everyone not to work with me because I'm unreliable and I messed up and all these things. And what happened is the next day I went and did what I needed to do to fix the problem. And like just hauled ass. And it was absolutely no problem. The project went off without a hitch. Everything was great. And, you know, from that story of there is absolutely no way out of this, I am doomed to, no, everything went fine, because of course it does, because there's always a way forwards, is a thing that I try and remember every now and again, that, like, yeah, you know, this is probably not the stickiest situation that you have been in. So have a chat with past you to, you know, how do they get out of this sticky situation? I think actually is a really great way of thinking.
That's amazing. Your story reminded me of one of mine, and I'm sure we all have a version of that. And I've never actually gone back and interrogated, you know, what was the thing that I learned or got from that. You know, sometimes we just go back and we just refill the cringe.
Oh yeah, I think there's enough water under the bridge now, and like it all went fine, then I'm like, it's okay. But every time if that person's name comes up, if I see their name on LinkedIn, or even if I hear a name that's like it, my brain goes back to being at work, having the phone call where this person was like, hey, we've got the same image of a house 80,000 times. Oh no. But it's all fine. Anyway, all right. Lovely. I love that. Thank you. My number two then is play a game. So for me, that might be a video game, because it's just super simple. If the, you know, going from sort of a book like The Chimp Paradox, if your chimp is busy doing something else, or if it's busy chattering away and you can keep it occupied with something that's going to use, you know, a little bit of motor skills, a little bit of lateral thinking, perhaps a bit of puzzle solving, anything that can sort of keep it occupied in a way that is something that you can win. I think that is really useful and a nice way to fritter away some time and just to calm down. So whether that's a mobile game or whatever, or, you know, maybe even doing a bit of work on a jigsaw or something. I think anything that is like that, where it's just going to use a little bit of that sort of processing bit of your brain. Again, on the calories, it's like those brain, if you like, brain calories, that energy, that time, that thought, it's going to get used somewhere. That energy is going to go somewhere. So dissipate it through what we might call aimless activity, but really there's, you know, the aim is to help you feel better.
I love that one so much. That wasn't on my list, and it's definitely just slotted up into a high level now. Yeah, like play a game, and I think a key word there is play, or make a game out of something. But yeah, what that also reminded me of is, you know, one, yeah, that game helps you, you know, kind of emotionally regulate and you know, fritter away some of that energy in a good, productive way. You know, it helps us kind of soothe ourselves and calm ourselves. And it reminded me of this study that I read called Pandemic Practice. And it's by a horror researcher named Colton Scrivener, which, you know, perfect name for somebody who studies and researches horror.
Yeah, especially goth. That's a gothic ass name, that is.
Yeah, totally. And he did a large research study that showed that people during the pandemic were people who played horror video games, or, you know, different types of video games, violent video games, these role-playing games, it actually helped them emotionally regulate and helped them kind of practice and prepare and cope and develop these helpful strategies through this act of playing games, through this kind of scenario role-playing, you know, taking this time to do this in a very safe, fun context. And that has just stuck with me, the value of that. And I think that's coming through in your pick there. I love it.
Marvelous. Yeah, there's I've actually just downloaded a horror suspense game. I don't think it's the kind of game you can win, though, so that might be a problem. But yes, I definitely can resonate. There is, yeah, it is somehow,
yeah, and winning, that
oddly soothing,
that feeling of progress. We need that feeling of progress in small little bits, so the winning is part of that. So like winning, play, gaming. Yeah, love it.
Perfect. What is your number three?
Yeah. So this one's just simply about questioning my thoughts and observing my feelings. So asking yourself, what's really going on here? Where is this coming from? Whose voice is this? And treating feelings like feedback. So feelings can be a measure of how it's all going for you. So doing a quick check-in with myself, like, you know, how am I feeling? Where am I feeling this in my body? You know, what is that? You know, am I feeling it in my neck? What does that remind me of? What other times where I've felt this way in the same place in my body? If you start to learn those mappings for yourself, that's really good information. And you can kind of learn things and sense things before your brain has the conscious thought. You could start to learn really well, like, oh, my neck's tensing up. Oh, yeah, I'm feeling this way. I have this thought. This is what's happening. You can make better sense of situations. Sounds a little bit woo. It's probably a little bit more woo than I'm used to, but because I'm definitely more on the, you know, what's the science that backs this up? But there is a lot to say about embodied cognition, this idea that we think with our whole bodies, and our bodies are often faster in interpreting signals and information than our conscious brain can realize what is actually going on. So we can reverse that pattern and look to our bodies.
I had something like that on my sort of honorable mentions list, which is building a habit of noticing your thinking, and the kind of reaction that creates in your body. And I think it's a skill that you develop over time to be able to catch yourself in the middle of that loop of, for want of a better word, like stimulus and then reaction. The cat just keeps making this annoying noise because it wants to be annoying today. the reaction to want to go and throw the cat across the room. What's the, where can you catch the bit in between and go, okay.
Yeah. What's happening? What happened just before?
Yes.
That thought.
Yeah. Know? And yeah, that ability to sort of, yeah, if it's a voice, whose voice is it? Yeah. Like, and even, okay, here's, you know, I've got a potential reaction that could happen. Do I want to react that way? Would it actually be helpful for me? And, you know, it's not something you can do straight away, but I do think it is something that you can learn to do. Which actually, I think points to one of my potential later points that I might actually put in the in our honorable mentions. So yes, I'm this list is evolving as we speak. So, okay, my number three, I'm going to go with making the right thing the easy thing. So if there is something that, like I've talked about, whether it's exercise or it could be meditation, it could be something that you know is more helpful to you long term, that is maybe hard to sort of make yourself do now, is borrowing from the idea of atomic habits. If there's something that you want to do that is more long-term beneficial, then because our brains are wired for more sort of short-term things, what you need to do is make that thing easy, attractive, obvious, and satisfying.
Love it.
yeah. And so easy, obviously, just like you talked about, walk 20 minutes, like listen to a punk playlist, walk for 20 minutes. That's great. Making it attractive might be, if you're the type of person who really loves to discover new music, then it might be that. I'm probably more, for me, the attractive thing is, I haven't listened to that album in ages, or this audiobook or whatever, and I really want to listen to that, and that'll give me the good feels. So that's making it attractive. Making it obvious is things like making your trainers really like putting all of the stuff that you would need to get out of the house within as easy reach as possible. So one of the ideas is, if you wanted to walk first thing in the morning, is you basically put your walking shoes or your running shoes at the side of your bed so that you can kind of just slip into them, is kind of the idea. And then making it satisfying is, what is the reward that you can give yourself after having done the helpful thing? Because that is the way that our brains are wired. They want that reward. They want the bit of dopamine or whatever. So what would be something that is, you know, a not counterintuitive reward that you can give yourself at the end?
Love it so much. That was on my list as well, under create. It was one of my honorable mentions create better habit loops. And so along with that, it's, you know, for the thing that you want to be doing, you know, make it cue, craving, response, reward. So those were the four things you touched upon. But also for the behavior that you don't want to be doing, make it less obvious, make it less appealing, make it less easy, make it more difficult, and make it less rewarding.
Yeah.
So I think we often
stop buying crisps if you don't want to eat crisps.
Yeah.
Or if if you don't want to have eaten crisps,
yeah.
then don't buy crisps.
What will you buy instead? Or what will you do instead? So it's both sides of the equation. It's the thing that you don't want to be doing, and it's the thing that you do want to be doing. And I think that's the key to that. We often kind of fixate on one, you know, either the habit we're trying to create or the thing we're trying to stop doing, without attuning to both sides of that.
Wonderful. What is number four for you?
Number four for me is simply just get stuff out of my head. So when I start using my mind as storage, or even worse, as a rage room, problems will ensue. So how you get things out of your head is going to vary by need and depending on what it is. So sometimes that's going to be verbalizing, you know, speaking, talking it out. Sometimes that's physical activity, working it out. And sometimes it's maybe writing, or because writing is just making your thoughts clear in, you know, some sort of externalized form, or it's putting it into a system like a calendar, or maybe it's delegating. It can be a variety of things, but the underlying idea is like, get it out of your head. Your brain is not for storage, as Tiago Forte says.
Why didn't I think of that? Because that's so useful. That's Ooh, that's wonderful. What are, okay, mini five. What are Kim's top five ways to get things out of her head?
Probably talking, writing. Putting it in a system. Like I live in my calendar. Like if it's not in my calendar, it doesn't get done. Everything I do, including large gaps of space, because to do whatever I want, that's in my calendar, because I'm also like, I'm highly organized, but I'm also incredibly rebellious. It's like I want structure, but I also want freedom. And both of those values have to coexist. So how do I make that work? That was my top three. Verbalizing, physical activity is not on the list, and it should be.
Yeah.
There's a theme here. When you were talking about like emotions and all of that, secret time, I am really, really bad at this, and I'm working on it. I'm working on improving that connection. I live up here in the head, and I'm trying to do less of that. Yeah, I'm going to have to think more about four and five. What about you? What are some good ways to get stuff out of your head?
I think when I was younger, it's funny, I do less of this now, but when I was younger, it used to be songwriting. And when you are younger, that can end up with songs that can be quite self-centered and a bit whiny and a bit sort of meh. But you know, that's sometimes the teenage experience.
It serves the purpose.
It absolutely does. There is, I verbalize most of my thinking. I talk to myself all day. I'm the only one here, but I did it when I was a kid. It's always been how I've processed stuff, by verbalizing it. I will have conversations, and I will sometimes go, yeah, but then, you know, I think about this, and like, I will have the full conversation. That is, like I said, I've done it since I was a kid, and my mum used to like shout up at me, and she'd hear me talking to myself. Why are you talking to yourself? Like, I sort of don't know any other way.
You were always meant to podcast.
Oh God. Yeah. Nice. Okay. So, my number four then is, weirdly enough, I think there's something of a theme with some of mine, but, it's put a record on and move to it. And this is because I think it's surprising, how much of an endorphin rush you can get sometimes from, you pop a song in, maybe it's something completely cheeseball, but something that brings you a great bit of joy to be able to move in a silly way. And I kind of think that's part of it is moving in a silly, unfettered way that is completely almost unconscious of the world around you. It literally is dancing like nobody's watching. And
that's a good way to get out of your head.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, so if you want a good example of what this looks like, I actually think it's really well portrayed in Love Actually, when Hugh Grant is dancing to Jump in 10 Downing Street, because for the most part he's completely alone in the house. It's the evening, and he puts the song on, and he just starts. He's I don't know if he's quite sliding down banisters, but he's really going for it. And it starts small, and then it goes big. And if you want to know what that looks like, that's what it is. And it's just the ability to just move and be silly, and that lack of care, that lack of thought, I think it becomes much more instinctive. You're really vibing to the music, and that's why it's got to be something that can really get you moving. And so doesn't have to be energetic, but something that feels like good walk on music, or something silly, something boppy, just expend some energy that way.
Yeah, and it made me realize, like, why isn't Get Into Flow on my list?
Ooh.
Because this is part of that.
Yeah.
It's that idea of kind of like where you lose sight of all of your thoughts and surroundings, and you're just in the moment and you're in flow and you're just moving.
That, I think, is part of the game thing. playing a game, I think you're absolutely right. It is getting into flow in that sense.
Yeah. Oh, we could do a whole side topic about which games do that.
Absolutely. Wonderful. And then your number five.
My number five, I call this one Be Like Alice in Wonderland. So her changing size symbolizes her growth and transformation. And so there's two ways that we can do this. So making things smaller and making things bigger. So when we make it smaller, we're breaking things into their steps, maybe minimum viable progress here. So the smaller, the better. You know, what's local? What's achievable? Maybe it doesn't even scale. So lots of different ways of thinking about small, you know, getting into the details. What's the smallest thing I could do here? What if I did even less? I love doing less. I love conserving energy or just making it so simple and so small. And then on the flip side, making it bigger. You know, playing that tape out, like following the thing to its logical conclusion, you know, and if that happened, and letting the feeling that you're having or the experience you're having be as big as it can go. Like, how much space does it actually need? You know, we often think it's bigger than it really is. Like, if I'm really angry, you know, and if I just like let that be big, I'm like, how big is this? You know, how angry am I? It's almost like a puffer fish, you know, it's like the puffer fish blows up and let it blow up. And then what happens afterwards? It just kind of bobs there and then it deflates. So I just kind of want to see, like, how big is it?
I love that. That makes me think of two things. So on the small side, I'm thinking about, I counseled myself ages ago to, I remember feeling overwhelmed, feeling like just so much, so many roiling thoughts going on in my brain and didn't know what to do. And so many things I was supposed to do and should do. And I was sat there on the sofa and I just told myself, just stand up. Because I knew, like, if you stand up, okay, well, you're not going to just sit down again. Because, like, I had things like I had to empty the litter tray, I had to go and get some shopping in and do various things. And I was like, just stand up. Because then you've made it a little bit easier to go over to the litter box and do that thing. And it was just like, just taking what is the smallest action that you could do to sort of move yourself forwards. And yeah, it was just stand up.
My version of that is just go lie down on the yoga mat.
There you go. Yeah. Also, like, making things bigger, I think, is really interesting because it kind of makes me think of some advice I've had from a couple of people, which if things can get dark in your brain, is to what would happen if you turned that thing into a cartoon.
Love it.
And so that idea of the giant puffer fish, you make it ridiculous. I think that's really good. And is also, I'm not a massive J.K. Rowling. I mean, you know, J.K. Rowling as a person has a, you know, that's a different
thing.
You're
not a fan.
But the idea of taking, I can't remember if it was the boggart or whatever that turns into your biggest fear, and then you point your wand at it and you say ridiculous and it turns into something silly. I think the ability, that's a sensible thing to be able to do. If you can find the thing that is scaring you, find the thing that is darkening your mental doorstep, and then find a way to make it silly, I think is great. And I love the idea of a giant puffer fish just bobbing about. Boop.
And I think that's a really great strategy for dealing with our thought gremlins. So, you know, if we don't kind of look at them with a little bit of curiosity and creativity, you know, or maybe even naming them a little bit, they stay anomalous and scary and we don't know what they are. But when we kind of name them or almost cutify them, then, you know, they become more manageable. We could even, you know, we could defeat them, we can tame them, we might even befriend them and be like, okay, this is, you know, how can I work with this?
Absolutely. And perhaps befriending them is the thing that we should do all along.
Not always easy.
No.
Could be beneficial.
So my final one is, I don't know how approachable this will feel for everyone, because I think it is different. But I'm going to say meditate for 15 to 20 minutes. a day if you can. If you're new to meditation, just do it for 10 minutes. And I like Headspace as a really good introduction to that, because it made it very approachable. The whole point is you can't stop. You're not supposed, like, if this is something new to you, the idea is not to sit there and go om and never think of anything, because that's impossible. It's like, don't think of an elephant, now you're thinking of an elephant. The idea is to get into the habit of noticing your thoughts and to gently put them aside when they pop up, and not attach yourself to them, and to be able to do that for, if you can start by doing it for 10 minutes, It's a great thing to be able to do, and a great habit to be able to get into. I speak as someone who hasn't done it for ages, and I keep telling myself that I should. There's a lot of habits that I would like to get myself back into, but for some reason I haven't figured out how to make the right thing the easy thing.
Same. Some of these things are things I want to do, but I haven't quite figured out for myself the weight. So meditating is a really good example. It's like, I like the concept and the goal of it, but the form, the form of meditation, I need to find some other way to get that outcome or do that thing, because sitting and noticing my thoughts, the traditional meditation, the Headspace way, just doesn't gel with my brain. And so I like everything about it, but I got to find my way in.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. And I've heard, it's rare, but I've heard people talk about a difficulty, because one of the ways that they do that to stop your, or to help your mind when it's sort of wandering off, is to focus on the breath. For me, that does a strange thing. And I've heard this in a really severe case where someone basically they couldn't breathe because they were focusing on the breathing. And I have the same thing. Like, I can't just focus on my breathing, because then my brain's like, okay, so conscious, you're now in charge of breathing. Cool. All right. I thought it was delegated to this bit over here that just happens that I wasn't. Oh, right. Now you want to watch it. Okay. Consciousness, you're now in charge of breathing.
Yeah.
Ready? And for this person, it was like consciousness went, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that, and shut down, and the guy couldn't breathe. Whereas for me, it's just like, I become very, very aware of my breathing and then intentional about my breathing, and I can't just watch it. I have to take part. There is no way that the breathing just happens.
Yeah.
Whether that's normal, I don't know, but I definitely know that, like, everybody's relationship with that kind of thing is going to be different. But yeah, I think sometimes just sitting in silence for 20 minutes is just, it has other very useful benefits sometimes, and it is just 20 minutes of not chatter.
I agree. And I'll add, sometimes to achieve that, to get there, for some people, you need the opposite of that. So for me, at times, in order to quiet my brain, I might listen to 20 minutes of noise. Because I tend to get extremely bored when I'm understimulated. So if the environment's just too quiet, too sterile, it's just, that's my own version of hell. So to get to that calm place, sometimes I need like a visually chaotic environment or a lot of noise. So like maybe really loud, chaotic metal. And then I'm like, ah, right. It's the same thing that I read this study recently about people with ADHD. Some of them find coffee to be, and other stimulants like that, to be actually calming and soothing, because it allows them to get to a level of normalcy. It meets this need that allows them to actually regulate. And I don't know if those labels apply to me, but I do know that the way sometimes for me to get into peace or flow or that meditative state is I need a certain level of stimulation. It's probably also, I'm just spitballing here, but it's probably also why like hot yoga or some of these more extreme forms of mindfulness and these activities might work for some people, is because you are like increasing the stimulation in one area that's allowing people to maybe focus. I don't know. I got to look into that one.
Mm. Turns out we're all different. So this is Kim Whitten, and I met Kim in a tent in a field in Hastings in the south east of England, I think. Never Shredded Wheat. Yeah, I think that's about right. We got on then, and of course it made perfect sense to bring her on the podcast eventually. So we got it together. We got some lovely episodes coming up, by the way. Next week, we are talking about physicists. We're going back to science, and we're talking about physicists who influence our daily lives. We've got a nice little, I think, a bit of a trifecta there with real sci-fi inventions that have come into real life, and another one. And after that, we're going to be talking about famous book series that were adapted into video games. And then after that, this one is one that I have been meaning to do for ages, and I've finally found someone to do it with. I'm not going to tell you what it is. I've got to keep you on the hook somehow, haven't I? Tell you what, let us delay no more and get back to this episode. We are building our top five list of ways to tame our brain gremlins. Wow, we've got an amazing list here, and I think the challenge now is whittling this down to five. I've taken a stab, so let me see how this jives with you. We can move things around or add and remove. So from five to one, I've got number five: create a better habit loop, and maybe better could be a more productive habit loop. Number four: play a game. Number three: build a top five list of strengths, weaknesses, and values. Number two is put on a playlist and go for a walk. And then number one is get stuff out of your head, because I think that is that's a really great one. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on that provisional list there?
I think that's a great list. I would add needs to that: strengths, weaknesses, values, because you brought up needs, and I think that's a really good one. Yeah, I don't have anything. I like the list. I like the order. It feels quite comprehensive and balanced.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. So in that case, then, Kim Whitten, do you consent to this list?
I do.
I did have number six as sort of notice your thinking, because I think that's a good one as well. But is there anything else that you had that didn't quite make your top five?
Yeah, I think I've got one here about expanding your world of possibilities. So giving yourself some better options. Oftentimes we just go to the thought or the way of doing something because that's what we've always done. But when we stop and notice your thoughts, that's a theme that keeps coming up, we can actually question that and give ourselves more things to choose from. So maybe more reasons why somebody did something, or, you know, why something happened. And the more you do that, the more you give yourself more options and expand your possibilities, you get more choices to choose from, and you can take better, more charitable views of things for yourself. You can process things in a way, you know, making better predictions, coming up with better, more helpful, or just sometimes nicer reasons for why things were the way they were. And then also knowing that, like, okay, here's all these options, here's all these thoughts or ways I can interpret this. And all of them are optional. You know, these thoughts are optional. So I can choose the better one here now that I've given myself a nice buffet.
One of the things that makes me think of is I've been trying to get more into the idea of the three principles, which is very, this can really get into the weeds, but it's the idea that you are not your thoughts, and that our entire experience of the world is created through our thoughts. The way we react, the way we do everything is all through our own filtered perception, and we can choose how we react to those thoughts. We can choose what we want to do with those thoughts. They are not real. They are thoughts. And one of the things I liked by Michael Neal, who is a big proponent of this, is that sometimes the thoughts aren't even what you think, which I think is wonderful. Because if you think about intrusive thoughts, if you think about things that you're like, I can't believe my brain just went there. It's like, No, I don't actually think that, but my brain just, you know, gave me this thought. It just popped unbidden into your brain. That doesn't, you know, that thought doesn't make you bad. You know, if you think it's a bad thought, it's like, yeah, it's just a thought. That's literally all it is. It's not anything else.
That's why we also got to get it out of our head. Yeah, so we can look at it and go, yeah, no.
Yeah, not so much with that. Wonderful. One of the ones I had was on my sort of honorable mentions was looking at what you can take away rather than add. I was watching an episode of a show called New Amsterdam, which has made its way over to Netflix, and it's exactly the kind of show I need right now. And one of the stories, it's a story about a hospital, and one of the characters is a psychiatrist. Yeah, he's the head of the psychology department, and there's a kid that's brought in that is on like six different kinds of meds, and he's basically a zombie. And that's because we get into this thing where one thing gets prescribed to deal with this other thing, and then that creates a side effect, and so we tack on this other thing. And I know, like, not everything, you know, works in every situation, but it does make me think about what are the things that we can take away, because sometimes we build this personal Jenga tower of stuff, and we call it our life, and it's finely balanced, and I have to have my caffeine in the morning, because if I like, everything's fine if I have my caffeine in the morning, but if I don't, then I get a rage and headache and this, and then I get grumpy and this, and suddenly the whole thing, you know, it's like, it feels like it's a solid tower, but like it's built on this one brick that could really, you know, come apart.
Yeah, don't wiggle that one out. That's not me suggesting that you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh God. Don't cut that wire. And it's not me suggesting that you shouldn't drink caffeine or whatever it is. It's just like, but what are the things potentially you could take away or reduce or remove rather than add on?
So the value of subtraction. There's a book I've been meaning to read about this. I think it's called Subtraction, but it's this idea of focusing on the less is more, that you know, we're so I think conditioned to this additive thinking of like, what's my contribution, you know, what, you know, and but it's like, oh yeah, well, what can I take away? It's almost like this I think of a lot of times with creativity is like, some people are builders and they will make something out of nothing, and I'm definitely not that kind. I'm a sculptor. I'm like, what, give me the block of clay and let me just keep removing bits, you know, give me something to edit. And I'm happy, you know, what can I get rid of? And it's all about like taking away the pieces, and then hopefully there's a sculpture, something beautiful in there, but not always, but sometimes it's just fun to take away the pieces.
Yeah. Keep chipping.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep on chipping.
Fantastic. Kim, this has been an absolute pleasure. I thought there would be overlap in a different way. I think there's overlap in some of the ways that we approach. Like, we're going in the same direction, which I really like, but coming at it from different angles. And so I really appreciate it. So what are you up to? Where can our listener get in touch with you? If, for example, they want to work with you or learn more about the ways that you can help them.
Yeah. So the biggie is that I put out a weekly newsletter called Hold That Thought, and it's a very short, brief newsletter with three things every week to help people turn overthinking into expert thinking. You can sign up for that on my website. It's witten.kim, witten.kim. I'm also on Instagram and LinkedIn as well, and Medium.
Very good. Thank you. Kim, this, like I said, has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me on List Envy this week.
Thank you, Mark.